about a workman's comp investigation that we did not undertake. Well, we've undertaken four or five of those, and nothing has ever resolved out of it. So it just, when you know that nothing's going to happen by spending the time, you're better off just to reallocate the time to something else. That's very important. We like to be doing those things. They're fun.
Hey, mind if I make a couple of comments on things that I've heard during the last days or whatever? One witness indicated they had a particular problem with the timeliness of experience modifications. We've been aware of that. We've been working with the Grading Bureau to get them to put these things out in a more timely fashion. We have also found that there are some insurance companies who are not properly endorsing their policies going in to the effect that there will be a change in the experience modification. And what we basically told those insurers is that failing to have the endorsement prevents them from applying any change unless it's downward and we require the change. So in effect, if the insurers who do not have that information appearing on their policy to begin with, or some endorsement saying that this thing is tentative and will be changing as soon as it's calculated, are protected. So we're addressing that, and we have some ongoing concerns about timelines. Some of the comments that I've heard bring up an issue that we've had from time to time, and it's also a difficult one to address. It involves either an adjuster or an agent or broker giving fast and easy information to an insured that just puts that insured off their back, so to speak, and is not factual information. In other words, they just say something to get the person or to put them off. In many cases, some of the complaints that we do ultimately hear, we see that information is causing a very, very incorrect or wrong impression out there, because in many cases we find that there are remedies for those people and they're not being given the proper information. That's been real tough to identify as to a particular person. When we do find that, we go right to the person directly, the person who's giving the information, bad information, and we'll ostracize them right there. That's not a formal process, but it is something that says that if you continue this kind of activity, we're going to be over you like grease, because it really, they're not doing anybody any service. They're maybe making their own time a little easier, but they're not helping the public. The uninsured motorist UMUIM situation and the conduct with insurers and their insureds is a problem that we've recently become aware of, and we'll be attempting to address that. I'm not sure yet how we're going to go about it, but that is a problem. We've heard of some inappropriate leveraging, if you will. Self-insurance and adjusters. The policeman that testified yesterday, the heart goes out to a person like that because he's just been battered around the system somewhat atrocious. The workers' comp law requires that an adjuster be licensed by the Division of Insurance if it is going to adjust claims for self-insurer. And yet the insurance code identifies an adjuster and one who we can apply Title 21 statutes to as being a person who is adjusting claims under an insurance contract for an insurance company. So we have a dilemma there as to whether or not when an adjuster is adjusting claims for a self-insurer, whether we have jurisdiction. It's our belief right now that under Title 21 we do not, because he is not operating under that license. Am I making sense? There is a flaw, I think, in the definition of adjuster.
He should be under your jurisdiction also.
He should be. And we think that what's needed then is maybe some modification of the definition of adjuster in the insurance code, so that it will pull up an adjuster who is working a workers' comp claim for a self-insurer.
Okay. One other modification from listening to the testimony, Don and I went back and did some serious thinking last night, and it's pretty obvious that there are two kinds of adjusters, workman's comp adjusters and all other adjusters. And right now those are lumped together, and you're either an adjuster licensed or you're not. And we're thinking seriously about maybe separating those two functions, and people are either pre-qualified as a workers' comp adjuster or they're qualified as an all other adjuster, or I suppose you could have one that was dually qualified. Because I think some of the horror stories we've heard in the last 2 days have resulted maybe from people who were adjusting claims above their head.
Okay. Maybe you could just stay with us here for a couple minutes. I'd like to take some more testimony from Adrian Anderson. I request that you like to testify.
As the issue came up earlier, again, my name is Adrian Anderson. I'm with the National Campaign Against Toxic Hazards, and although I testified earlier this morning, but principally about the hazardous waste issue and the effects of the tort reform bills on that, previous to assuming the current position, I was also with the National Healthcare Campaign based in Washington, D.C., an organization looking at the quality of health care and also the cost of health care in the United States. Many of the people that testified from around the state talked about the question of medical negligence and compensation for those injuries, and thought it might be of interest to the committee to have this additional piece of information that in 1985 I have a list of rankings of states around the country where doctors have had revocations of their licenses, suspensions, or probations. And for the year that was surveyed, Alaska has the distinction of having falling last in the category of having zero actions against doctors. Now that can mean two things. Either in the state of Alaska you have absolutely the best physicians who have never injured anyone, and that would be really nice, except I think if that were the case you would not have had the testimony that you've heard today, particularly the gentleman with going in for a head injury diagnosis and coming out missing a leg, and others who just today in a random sampling of people testifying have had some serious problems. I think it more likely suggests the fact that there's not adequate policing within the medical profession. And if it's the case that we have such good medical expertise in the state of Alaska, then where is the medical malpractice crisis coming from? So I think it just creates a circle where there's certainly some need to do some serious examination of the data about that particular problem. And for comparison, when a couple of weeks ago we met with the Colorado Attorney General on the question of medical malpractice problems in the state of Colorado, he indicated that they had 200 complaints against doctors backlogged to the point that the State Board of Medical Examiners could not fully analyze them. And Colorado, of course, ranks very low at the list, just right above Alaska in this situation. So certainly that is something that I think that the committee would want to take a look at, and probably some areas of reforms that would be more beneficial to the public, be more cost-effective in the long run, and would be a better way of addressing this problem than attempting to gut people's rights to compensation when they have fallen victim to this type of negligence. So I will provide this for the committee to copy as well.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else along the teleconference network that wishes to testify at this time? Hearing none, is there anybody here in Anchorage that wishes to testify? Mr. George.
If I could make one last comment. Today, we have heard substantial comment from various groups, the poor tort reform, the injured consumers, the regulators, and virtually everyone, basically criticizing me for failing to have the data available categorized so that it could be used to separate costs or whatever. And I have to tell you that nobody's ever wanted it that way before, and we haven't collected it that way. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. And in trying to think of ways that it could be, for instance, with workers' comp claims, if you want to know how much is spent on rehabilitation and how much is spent on plaintiff attorneys and how much is spent on defense attorneys and how much is spent on adjusters, I think that we could sample a number of the insurance companies' files. wouldn't do a 100% sampling, but you could do a random sampling and come up with some relative figures. And I think we probably could do that. It would be a project, certainly, and it wouldn't be 100% accurate, but it might be worthwhile doing. I guess my real question is that if I knew what type of data you wanted now and what type of data you would want next year, I could go out and start developing that, and we'd be happy to do that. And if anybody can give us some directions on the types of things they'd like to see, to the extent that it's available from the insurance industry, we certainly have the ability to make them provided, or we can go out and develop it ourselves. But I guess the unfairness I felt is people were taking those shots at me. Nobody had ever asked for it before, and so we haven't developed it. But it doesn't mean we can't and shouldn't. And if someone will tell us what they like, I think we could work with that.
Mr. Chairman, to supplement that, in a division we receive tons of information. There's just a large variety of information. Some of it we are able to compile. We've been impaired, if you will, in our ability to compile some information that some would like to have. We've been impaired in our ability to compile information that, frankly, I would like to have, because I just don't have the time, nor do I have the staff to apply to doing some of those compilations. We get some extensive information on products, liability, losses, premiums, specifically separated from everything else. We even get that on a by-state basis. The same thing for medical malpractice. Yet we've not been able to get in and pull off that kind of information and compile it. We get that reported by each insurer each year. And in order for that to make any sense, we'd have to pull that all together for all of the insurers that are writing those particular lines in Alaska and see what kind of conclusions and what kind of analysis we can make from that data. We have it, we have the raw data, but we don't have the ability to compile it right now. The computer system that we're currently using, frankly, in my opinion, is good for word processing and little else. I don't know who that's going to make unhappy, but that's my opinion. I don't even have Multiplan on that computer so that I can do some of this stuff. When I want to do some compilations, I basically take it home because there I've got a computer that can handle it. That's frustrating. And it goes on and on. That's pretty good.
Mr. George, as one of the people who requested that type of information, first I'd like to say that I'm sorry you took it personally because I didn't really name you and it was directed at the system in this instance. And I would hope that if you do pursue that type of analysis of the information, that you would include the insurance company's administrative costs, including the salaries of their top officers. I mean, very detailed data, so we know exactly what they're writing off as, quote, expenses, and what they're not writing off as expenses and actually admitting to as profits. And Mr. Cope, this is my own personal bias. I'm not testifying on behalf of my employer. I'm not going to make either of these comments. But Mr. Cope, I submit that if it's information that you would like to have and you say you don't have the time, then maybe the division needs to take a look at its priorities, because I understand that your budget has gotten an increase and you've got some additional positions, and I think maybe it may be a question of, like I said, rearranging priorities so that this information can be made available to the public.
As to those positions, I'm real concerned about the inability to fill those positions, and I'd sure like to entertain some creative thinking about what we can do to help you fill those positions. I'm amazed. I guess I'm in the wrong line of work. If you've got three or four positions there, you can't find anybody who wants to work, and they're well paid, and there seems to be a heck of a labor problem around here right now with people out of work, and maybe we need to start our own little school where we can train these kind of people or something.
Okay. The one that we've had open for some time that we've been unable to find anyone for is a chief financial examiner, someone that understands insurance, statutory accounting, that can actually go in, do an examination physically in an insurance company, and because they use different accounting methods that we prescribe, but it's not just something you go out and get a CPA and they would immediately be able to do it. There are very few people in the country that do that. That's the difficult one.
Well, is there a chance that we can kind of make, if we've been trying for 2 years to fill this position, we can't, maybe we should just get somebody who's a CPA, get the best we can, and at least put them to work. Maybe it won't be perfect, but it's better than having nobody there.
Yeah, unfortunately, part of it is working through the state personnel system, and they got rules, and that's for everyone's protection, but it does, you know, when you find the right guy, he doesn't meet the technical specifications, or he's out of state, and you have to go through, you know, 6 months of recruiting in state before you can go out of state, and lots of those kinds of hurdles. But we're still working on it, and yes, we have considered those other things. I hate to back down on our standards because I think we need someone of high qualifications, and yet, you know, no qualifications is what a vacancy has. So we're working on it. As for market analysts, though, that's a matter of just getting the positions classified and getting. We have to advertise for so many days for people so they get on the register and then we can hire. We're ready to do that. So we're talking about less than 6 months, and in state time, that's really not that long to get the positions created.
There's nobody out there in the private sector, people that own or run insurance companies, wouldn't be qualified to tell you whether insurance companies are sound or not.
Yeah, but they're making too much money. They all make more than I do.
Mr. Chairman, the other difficulty with the financial examiner position is that unless this is a qualified examiner to do insurance company examinations on a statutory accounting basis, the other states won't recognize our examination product. And that causes some problems itself, because a number of our companies do work in other states as well as in Alaska. And our product would be valued by the other states. And that can be a problem.
Well, if you think any ways we can help you, please let me know, because I'd sure like to get somebody for that position.
We appreciate your offer, and we well may take you up on that, and at least I'd like to report back to you on a step-by-step basis our frustrations and our accomplishments in that regard.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one question. I don't know the first thing about the insurance, and I can tell from previous discussions it's rather complex, but did I understand it right that 25 companies threatened that they were having problems with money, but only one is actually going out of business?
No, I think that was withdrawn from the marketplace.
Withdrawn from the marketplace.
They went out of business. They just said they wouldn't do any more business with surplus lines.
But was there some mention of 37 new companies or whatever?
There are certainly new companies that we have admitted to do business. We've also suspended 11 companies previously admitted to do business because they failed to meet our current financial requirements. We talked yesterday a little bit about the Guarantee Association having to pick up losses of insolvent carriers. Right now they're paying losses for Mission Insurance Company, Ideal Mutual, Transit Casualty, Carriers Insurance Company, Union Indemnity of New York, and there's a possibility of a couple more on the horizon. So there have been a record number of insurance companies that have become insolvent. There's not much question about that. There are other companies that have made money during the same time. On the average, the insurance business has not been, you know, as highly profitable as some of the witnesses have indicated. But those are averages. Some companies have made money.
But it just sounds like the number of insurance companies want to do business in Alaska that you say present themselves, that they're doing pretty well in a free enterprise system here.
Well, not all of those are actually writing coverage either. They have the ability to now. They're licensed to write, and they may or may not. But we have adequate market. We're very proud of that. The fact that we have markets that nobody else in the country has, that we've gone out and developed. Our Guides and Outfitters program, for 2 years we've had the only company in the country writing those on a current basis. And the only other company that's writing them is one we won't let do business here because of their financial and past record.
Thank
you. I want to thank Mr. George and Mr. Koch for the participation over the past 2 days. It's been very helpful. And seeing no further matters to come before the committee, adjourn the meeting.